You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 11th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the back pew of the First Church of Trump the Preposterous, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
We're in that back pew so we can get out.
Yeah. We're just there to watch. And it's pretty frightening.
Not to worship.
No. We're sort of in the salon, drinking coffee, going, what the hell is going on in there?
Yeah. The parlor. We're in the parlor with the old furniture. Yeah.
Looking through the glass going, oh, man, this is so bad. This is so very bad.
And every time he's on, he's covered. That's still because it's interesting. Okay.
And now it's reached the Mobius strip level where Stephen Colbert is covering the media, covering Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's eating Oreos because we just can't stop talking about this.
No, we can't. We can't.
And it's mocking, but it's true. It has become the singular obsessive focus. And everyone who said this will fade after a week or 2 weeks or a month or whatever it is. Sorry, guys. This is the Republican Party. This is what they look like now. And they might get a different figurehead, and it might very well be Jeb or whatever the hell it is a year from now. But this is who they are. Have you heard that Bobby Jindal?
What did he do?
He's launched a full frontal attack on Donald Trump.
You know, saying Bobby Jindal and full frontal at the same time is just not good for my health.
I found a clip of Bobby Brady desperately trying to play drums.
Okay.
And so I'll be working with that later.
Yeah. And did you hear that they have discovered a new human species?
Really?
Called Homo naledi. This is not a joke. This is totally serious. Mm-hmm. Underground, underwater, apparently, cave, because spelunkers found the cave.
Uh-huh.
And it is, they showed what they believed to be, what the face would look like based on the bone structure of the skulls they found. And it's, you know, a link between ape and human. And what is fascinating about them is, and maybe we'll talk about this during Bible Bitch, because, you know... Guess what? This cave is like between 2.5 and 3 million years old, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And there was no Bible down there.
No. Weren't no Bible.
No, but this human species that was not Homo sapien had a habit of how they buried their dead.
Oh, okay.
So it was conscious, you know, and they say ritualistic, but they don't mean religion. They mean... Right. Repeated over time in a certain way that was clearly designed based on death and practice. You know, this is what you do when someone dies. You lay them out and you put them in this cave that is away from the village and you lay them out this way and the bones were laid out and so forth. And so there was intelligence there. There was practice. There was intention.
Right.
And they found
a language, communication.
Clearly, yeah, some kind of communication. Yeah.
Tell people how to do this, right?
Right, right. And pass it along. So, right. And they, I believe, found the full skeletons of 15 people in this one cave. Yeah. Recovered parts of at least 15 individuals and skull and almost every bone in the body represented multiple times. Now it's possible to, you know, reconstruct this being, and it is a species of early human lineage. That's what it is.
Ah.
So congratulations to the scientists in South Africa who worked very hard to find this.
Way to go, science.
Yeah, science. Driftglass, we are going to do a couple of AMAs today, just so that we don't have to talk about Donald Trump for an hour, because I'm not going to do that.
Fair enough.
So some of these are from last week. I'll start, if you don't mind. We got a letter. Driftglass and Blue Gal, how do you encourage others to run for office? I have a horrible blue dog representative who votes against the people of our district at every opportunity. But no one will run against him in the primary. With gerrymandering, our state has gotten rid of most of the Republicans from office. However, he barely won re-election last time, as many abstained from voting for him. I don't think the House of Representatives is going to change hands in the next election, so I am considering holding my nose and voting for the Republican candidate. What are the negatives of doing this when the seat could easily be a Democratic seat in 2018, even with a Republican incumbent? Thank you, signed S. Mm-hmm. The dangers of doing that are that you continue to have a Republican House, and that you want, we would like to do everything possible to get John Boehner out of there and get Nancy Pelosi back in. Now, I have feelings about Nancy Pelosi that are not 100% positive, but she governed and she passed legislation.
She did.
And that's not what the Republican Party is doing. Actually had a debate, not really a debate. This person kept tweeting me and I didn't pay any attention after a while. But his point was continually, it was all about the Iran deal. And the Iran deal affects the American people, and therefore the Congress should have a say about it. And why don't you want things that clearly are in the American people's interest to be run by the Congress?
Uh-huh.
Which is absolutely not anything that I had ever said or had any conversation about. And then this morning, the tweet was, this is peace in our time all over again. And I said, or it's war in East Asia, depending on your metaphor, right? So, why don't you run this by the Congress? And what I find interesting is, the Supreme Court over the past, say what you want about the Supreme Court.
And we do.
But there do seem to be enough justices on the Supreme Court at the moment who care about the legitimacy of the court.
Mm-hmm.
There are far fewer members of the House of Representatives on the Republican side that care about the legitimacy of the House of Representatives. They just don't care.
Well, the House, I remember, and we'll get back to the question, I promise.
Yeah.
I remember several years ago on NPR, I forget who it was, Alan Simpson, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because the House has always been, where the nut jobs go.
Right.
The People's House, it's been a raucous place. And the Senate was supposed to be the place where you cool off and you have long, turgid debates.
It's the deliberative body. Right. Yes, yes.
It was one of the earliest examples of both-siderism just being absolutely blatant and being sort of piped into the middle of an argument so that we wouldn't have to talk about how the Republicans were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple of senators, I believe, just bitching about how the Newt Gingrich ruined everything. the House is always a bunch of lunatics, but Newt Gingrich really weaponized crazy and made it acceptable to just slander your opponents. And now that was, and they had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 examples of Republicans doing this. And the host of the program on NPR piped in with and I'm sure Democrats are just as bad. Out of nowhere, because we just somebody handed him a note saying, remember, they can pull our funding. Remember, it's everyone's responsible. Both sides are responsible. But there was a time when as screwed up and corrupt as those institutions have been for my entire lifetime, really, there was a time when there was a way things worked. And the crazy was in one place and the sober white male racist was in the other. And that's how things work. And that has completely collapsed now.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no institutional respect for the House by the House. There is no institutional respect for government by Republicans who work for the government, who run to sit in the government, who run to run the country, starting with Reagan and right up until today. The reason Republicans get elected to the House is to burn the House down.
Yep.
And that is completely unsustainable over the long term. But over the short term, you get elected. So how do you encourage others to run for office? Well, sadly or wonderfully, as someone said, every 2 years we go into church basements and school gymnasiums and overthrow the government.
Well, except we don't. We don't do that anymore because of money.
Right. Theoretically, it's still possible.
Yeah. So, I've run out of energy in that regard, though. I've run out of respect for that process because of money.
I think that I agree with you about 90%.
Mm-hmm.
But I do still notice in the town where we live, people do go door to door with petitions and get into public office based on their neighbors signing petitions.
Yeah, that's true.
And people still do. And if you're talking about a district where there's no possibility of anybody winning, but this sounds like a swing district. What you described here is a district where you have a fairly good chance of swinging the district. And I would try to find the Democratic organization in the district. There's one there somewhere. Somewhere, even if it's just about shuttered, even if it only if it's four old guys that meet once a month, there's a Democratic organization in your congressional district somewhere. Find them. Yeah,
but they don't have any interest in turning a incumbent Democrat out of office. That he's talking about a blue dog. He's talking about he has a Democrat.
Right. Find.
In the House of Representatives, representing his district. Now, they're blue dogs, and they vote against
right.
things that he believes in. And I would be working through letters to the editor and showing up at events and showing up at council meetings and showing up wherever he is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about harassing him, but I would be putting pressure on him to vote the way you want him to vote. And pointing out when he doesn't in letters to the editor that he is not representing the people of the district in that regard, because you say it's gerrymandered. Yeah. So,
but if you can get a Democrat elected, you can challenge them in the primary.
Yeah, you can. But he is considering voting for a Republican because this guy's such a blue dog.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's your choice. But I would want to look at the bigger picture. I'm much more party oriented in that regard. To me, I'm not going to put any Republicans in the House of Representatives ever.
Mm-hmm.
In our district, where they have attempted to gerrymander this district to get a Democrat in the House of Representatives from this district, and they didn't do it.
And they failed.
But what they have done is, you know, I do believe our congressman is much more responsive than the congressman we had before, Shimkus, who's now over. He's moved east to total Farm Belt Republican, solid red district, and he's terrible. But our congressman, who used to work for Shimkus. has responded to letters that I've written to him and has expressed in those letters approval for funding of contraception. And, you know, he's tried to appear reasonable because he's in a swing district. He has to. He knows this district has four or five universities in it, and that if you piss off the wrong people, he'll be out. You know, if college students are mobilized, he's out.
Yeah.
So, and women voters. If women voters are mobilized against him, he does a lot of shit to appear to be women friendly.
Yep.
He does women in business institutes and panel discussions for women in the economy and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, swing districts can be helpful if you've got a Republican in there, keeping them
terrifying.
On a little bit of a leash. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And every 2 years for him is going to be a race.
Yep.
So he's got to pay attention to that. But I'm very cynical right now about changing politics until we change Citizens United and money.
And you have been very consistent about that right along.
I have.
And
because when money becomes speech, money becomes the only speech.
And now we have a candidate in the Democratic Party who's running on just that issue.
Yep, we do.
Paul.
We do. And someone asked us to talk about Lawrence Schlesig, and I have his book on campaign finance. I've read it. Some of his stuff is pure fan fiction for a perfect society, this utopian society where everything is. But the anecdotes that he has in that book about money and politics are terrifying.
Yep.
We're going to, here, I want to talk to you about this bill. Sure, we'll talk about this bill. And then you're leaving the congressman's office and an aide comes behind you and says, you know, we're going to need a $200,000 contribution to our campaign.
Outright.
Because you have to, you know, if we're going to vote on this issue and move this forward, you have to keep us in office. And that way you do that is you have to give big bucks. Mm-hmm. And it's blatant, and it's
legal.
Apparently legal, because no one's stopping them, so it's legal.
And all of this, none of this stuff has to be legal.
No, that's the point. Common Cause has said many times, and if you, the old style McGovern politics of 1970-72, the reaction to Nixon. Mm-hmm. Go back and join Common Cause and read what they have to say or look at their website. We can get the money out of politics. We have to. Now I'm gonna sound like Bill Kristol. We have to have the will to do it.
If we just have the will to do it.
If we just have the will, we can do it.
And a couple of new microphones.
Yeah.
Then we'll turn that corner.
Yeah. So. And Lawrence Lessig is going to run on this issue and this issue alone and get out. And I think he realizes he's not going to win. But, boy, he's, like you say, he's getting a microphone in certain places and talking about it. Yeah. So,
and more microphones for people like that is a good thing.
We need that. And so I'm sorry to sound cynical. Run for local office. Absolutely. Start, you know, the Democratic Party doesn't do nearly enough, grow nearly enough seedlings for the future.
And there are lots of local boards. There's PTAs. There's school boards. There's water reclamation districts. There's all kinds of mosquito abatement districts. There's all kinds of little elected offices out there.
And that's work. And that's grunt work. And I understand that. You know, I was thinking this morning when I was driving from one school to another that we have three children in three different schools. And part of that is age, and part of that is the two younger ones are in schools, what we call schools of choice in our district. I have mentioned this in the past, and I don't want to get out too much on this tangent, but youngest child and our high school boy both attended, and youngest is still attending, a charter school that is in the district. The teachers are union. It is has the support of a single family foundation that is only supporting this school. They are not trying to revolutionize education
or bust unions
or solve some mayor's problem.
Right.
They want to support the idea of a slightly longer school day and more parental involvement and encourage more parental involvement. And so they have helped to set up a school that requires parental involvement in order to have your kid go there.
Right.
And that leads to better educational outcomes. Mm-hmm. Now, as I was thinking this morning, as I was driving all the kids to school and talking with them about their schoolwork on the way to school and involvement is power.
It is.
And involvement, in order to have the ability to have involvement, you have to have time. And you have to have resources, mental resources to do that. And so we have to tackle the issue of poverty so that parents are free to be involved in their children's education. They're not working three jobs and still on food stamps because wages are so low. Mm-hmm. And they can't be involved in their kids' education because, the war on drugs has made – I think it's like 18% of the children in this school district have one parent who is incarcerated.
Yep.
That's insane.
Yep.
By the way, you're not going to have parental involvement if there's a parent who's incarcerated, okay?
For a nonviolent drug offense.
Yeah.
Yep.
Highly likely for a nonviolent drug offense. Yep. So, but just getting back to your question, involvement is power.
Yes, it is.
And if you're in a position to have the mental capacity, the physical time, car, job, cable TV awareness of news capacity, subscribe to your local paper capacity to get involved in your community, that's power.
Start there.
Start there and use that.
And eventually, this is something that you talked about, and we're jumping a little bit ahead to the Bible portion of our show.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But various churches that become self-involved versus community involved.
Yeah.
And if you know, there are institutions in every community that are entirely self-contained.
Yep.
And they might very well meet on the golf course and decide who the Republican candidate's going to be. Mm-hmm. But they don't have no one knows who the hell members are. You don't nod at these people at the grocery store because you see them at every goddamn PTA meeting or board meeting or whatever. But there are people in your community who everybody knows because every time you go to a meeting, that person is there. And there are places in your community where you can get involved at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually someone will ask you, have you considered serving on a board? Have you considered maybe running for office? Have you, and not, probably not Congress, but something.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of, because at the end of the day, all the money in the world gets you most of the way. But you have to get people to come out and support you if you're a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And if the people behind you, even if they're small, and believe me, losing candidates, I know lots of losing candidates who are lovely people with a lot of supporters.
Mm-hmm.
But behind you should be a lot of people who think that what you do is important for the community and that you should be listened to. And, you know, it's the I hate to dwell on this. It's the Leslie Knope syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, there are really decent public servants out there and opportunities to serve your community.
Yep.
And if you serve in those places, people will notice.
And, you know, now that you talk about that, I was thinking about Gay Pride in Springfield, Illinois, which for a conservative area is remarkably popular and remarkably lacking in contention.
Yep.
And kids go to it. Yep. I mean, it's a family event. Pride Day, businesses get involved. There are tents. There are balloons. There are performing arts. And one of the reasons I think that Pride in Springfield has been so successful is that there is such a huge committed group of people that do theater arts in Springfield.
Yes, there are.
And have done theater arts for 30 or 40 years in Springfield. And some of them are gay.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't gay. But everybody knows one another and they're involved in the community on let's put on a show. And they put on really high quality theater arts.
Yep.
And so if you know Joe or Fred and you've known them for 40 years and they've put on everything from cabaret to Harry Potter on the stage and all of a sudden, oh, guess what? Those two guys got married last week.
Yeah.
Well, I've known them for 40 years. I knew they were living together then and I really don't have anything to say about it, you know.
And then there's a big festival among all the other festivals downtown.
Downtown, which is no big deal.
The food trucks and face painters and
well, and I couldn't go because you had six kids in the van that you were taking who wanted to go to Pride.
Right.
All six of them, three kids and their three friends, each one took a friend, all wanted to go because Pride is considered a fun activist. I mean, I think all the kids who went knew that they were being an act. They knew there was an issue involved.
Right.
It wasn't, let's go down and get a balloon. It was, no, we're going to go down, and I have a gay friend, and I have a gay friend, and we're going to go down and support gay rights and gay pride. But
family-friendly.
Family-friendly, yeah. And not – there weren't protests going on of that. So,
and I got to stand or sit on a bench and watch five generations of –
Everyone from the 60-year-old leather couple to the 20-year-old lesbians with a umbrella stroller, right?
Belly dancers and punks and hippies, you know, and everybody got along fine. There were no sullen people sitting in a corner angry. There were no protesters because there was nothing to protest. There was no. It would be like protesting. A band concert. It was not politically neutral, but it was so innocuous.
But because the activists were already involved in the community, because they were already well-known, because they were already out there putting their nose to the grindstone in terms of getting work done for the community, in terms of theater arts or whatever it was, that got stuff done because you had already built up that cred.
And frankly, nobody was going to get their teeth knocked out the next day in school.
No,
if you went to this thing.
Oh, no, because youngest child's teacher was there handing out balloons. So that's the way that went. So the fact that one of youngest child's classmates turns out to be transgendered is just, it just happens.
Okay.
You know,
I have to learn the new name, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
You still like the same breakfast cereal? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. We're all going to eat that Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which is terrible for you. Okay, good.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's it. That's the level of controversy in our church-going house in the middle of a conservative town that those sorts of things raise. So I have below the surface, at the neighborhood level, things are very interesting and can really – and you can have change. You can actually affect things that directly affect your life. That's the thing about local elected officials. They have to fill those goddamn potholes.
Right.
They can't talk about in the abstract what – they should do about the Iran deal. And they, no, this is bullshit. I don't care about that. I care that my kid's friend got hit by a car at this intersection. There should have been a stop sign there 3 years ago. What the hell are you going to do about it?
Right, right.
And that's where you can really catch people where they live and show them who you are and show them that you care.
Yep. My sidewalk needs fixing. Well, you know, some people say it's about climate change. No, my sidewalk needs fixing.
You know, goddamn gay marriage. Only... No.
What? No.
All right.
So we've talked enough about that. We're going to skip over a couple here, but someone wrote us and said, how's your basement?
Dry.
Our basement is great. Basement yes.
Dry. Yep.
Finally got it fixed, you know, what, 6-7 months ago, yep. I guess?
Yep.
And put it on a credit card, and we're paying that off slow but sure. But it was worth it. It was worth it.
Summer,
and it's not flooded.
This summer, it just rained.
Yeah, all summer long, it was rainy, and our basement stayed dry. Yep. So, and that is different from last year.
It is.
I also want to give everyone, several people have written, and people have been so awesome over the summer, generous response to the episode where I was talking about Junior Dude and his medication. Uh-huh. People have asked about that, and I've always written everybody back, but I'll let all of you know. Junior Dude is doing great. He is on new medication that is covered by insurance.
Uh-huh.
And I think his appetite is better.
Yep.
His attention level is better. We've also made some changes this year to his school schedule.
Yep.
So that he is in a math class with a special education teacher, which helps a lot because math is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we had not done that last year. We had sort of let him wing it, and that was not a good idea. But he is now in a math class with a special ed teacher, which is really helping. And also... math is earlier in the day, which his medication is much more in gear in his brain at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think his appetite's better. I think his his overall attitude towards junior year is kind of interesting because the rest of his classes, he's in college weight classes, and all of his teachers are trying to teach those college-bound students how to hold a conversation about an issue.
Right. Which is not a problem.
Junior Dude does not have a problem with that.
No.
That particular skill.
Nope.
So he is wondering, he said, I don't want to jinx it. Why is junior year so easy? And I said, because we eat dinner together. He hates to eat dinner together. He wants to be eating dinner in front of a video game. But we eat dinner together most nights and... We talk about things like archaeological digs and
what's happening in Hungary
and what are the words that keep coming up. Well, technically, he will say technically a lot, and his sister will say technically a lot. So he has had lots of practice in having adult conversations about political and historical and other kinds of issues. Constitutional. That was last night, youngest child, right?
And he kept balance of powers.
He kept wanting to jump in.
This is sort of thing that I have to believe in my heart pays dividends over decades, which is we're sitting around the dinner table talking about your duty as a citizen.
Right.
What are your rights and what are your duties as a citizen?
Yeah. And we had a long discussion about jury duty, right? That was a big one.
Yep.
Right? And do you have to? Yes, you have to.
Well, why? Why do you have to? Well,
because fair trials are important.
Fair trials are important, and citizens, any citizen of this country, as false as it is in practice, as much as this almost never happens, theory at least, you as a citizen deserve a speedy and fair trial.
Right.
And so that's the kind of conversations we have around the table. It's It's and Junior Dude likes to jump in the middle of those and say, well, technically,
you know, Donald Trump didn't have to serve on a jury. Yeah, we know. Okay. All right. I heard about that. All right.
So the basement's fine. Basement's dry.
Basement's dry. Junior Dude is doing well. And thank you for your interest in that, in my son.
And support.
Yeah, support of him as he moves on to work for Hillary Clinton in the State Department.
You know, Madam President, technically, it's Bosnia-Herzegovina. Technically, it's a Democratic Republic.
Yeah. Hey, President Kanye West, I'm here to help you. All right. We're going to read a letter about Bible Bitch.
You want to do one more?
We're going to do this one. This is a letter regarding Bible Bitch from TJ. Longtime listener, I appreciate most of what you two talk about.
Ruh-roh.
But I wanted to give you some feedback about the Bible Bitch segment. Obviously, this is just the opinion of one person. Take it for what you paid for it. What is the point of Bible Bitch? Personally, as soon as I hear Driftglass say Bible Bitch and I hear the thunder, I skip to my next podcast. Take episode 284, the last one where I listened to Bible Bitch, and the one that got me to change my listening pattern. Just before the Bible Bitch segment, both of you were talking and laughing about the horrible things written in the Bible and asking the rhetorical question, have you read this shit, and comparing it to the movie Saw. And I think it was actually Patton Oswalt who compared it to the movie Saw. I want to give credit there. So given that you don't appear to hold the Bible as some infallible text, or even one that is full of good things, why do you have a segment that uses passages from it to argue any point? Why should anyone care what John 4:16 says? God is love. What a bunch of crap. You know that God has told people to sacrifice their sons, their daughters, that it's proper to cut up a concubine into 12 pieces, etc., etc. Sure, God is love is a nice phrase, and it sends a warm, fuzzy message, and a message of love that aligns with my personal values more than the crazy stuff. But it carries absolutely no weight. It can't. You were just laughing about how ridiculous the Bible is. Mm-hmm. You have just set it up that the Bible is crap. Then you go on to read the passage from John about God is love and talk about how wonderful the message that is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bullshit. It has no weight. It cannot. You are choosing parts you decide are valuable and good, and discarding and discounting the others. Mm-hmm. And many others do the same, only making different choices.
Oh, yeah.
The Bible?
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Okay, never mind.
Interesting what you said there about different choices. Yeah.
Different choices. Okay. I'm going to finish the letter.
Yeah, please. No, go ahead.
The Bible has shown itself to be twisted by everyone who tries to use it as justification, exactly because it's full of all sorts of conflicting stories and morals. I'm sure you know all this stuff. I just reached a point where I got to episode 284 that made me realize I was done with Bible Bitch. I wish you both the best. You make a lot of great points in your podcast, and you sound like good people, but your Bible Bitch segment is where you part ways with reality. And descend into the madness for which you routinely lambaste the GOP.
Yeah.
The podcast would be stronger without it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thank you for that letter. That is good feedback. And I appreciate letters like that as opposed to you suck, because I don't think that's what you're trying to say. But we both laughed at exactly the same point in the letter of people do choose. The Bible is an incredibly important text in Western civilization.
Yes.
It's true. I could do Shakespeare Bitch instead.
You know, but... Miguel, if I may. If yeah. I may.
Yeah.
Timon of Athens just sucks ass. So I don't know why you keep quoting Hamlet as if you have to accept the entire canon as is or nothing.
I see.
Period.
Okay.
There's no debating that. It's just, it has to be, you either buy everything about it, including the punctuation, or you buy nothing. There's nothing in between. I defy you to point to any school out there of, say, theologians or people for the last several thousand years who believe otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and I particularly wanted to talk about this letter. When we read it, when it first came in, I was thinking, okay, I'm not going to use this. But then Mike Huckabee decided that, you know, eye of the tiger, and we're going to hold up our arms to Jesus and victory as Kim Davis comes out of jail. And I just watched that with horror.
I know.
I mean, just bleh. And I'm sure a lot of people did. It was a disgusting display. And as you know, I think TJ has a good point. You know, Kim Davis read the Bible in jail, and I'm sure she found a lot of justification.
I'm sure she did.
For her actions.
Yep.
From scripture.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
On the other hand, there's Jimmy Carter, who has taken scripture and used it to build houses for homeless mm-hmm. people. So, yes, it can be misused. It can be used. It's what you make of it.
Right.
It's what I make of it. But I'm an adult, and I am not using it as justification for how I feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that. Because the Bible tells me something, and I hope I've been clear about this in as Bible Bitch,
mm-hmm.
Because I am not saying because the Bible says this, therefore you must X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I want to read a passage from a book that I pulled off the shelf this morning, because I knew it would have something in it that would be germane to this conversation.
Well, let me ask our we hear from atheists all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear from lots of different kinds of atheists.
Yeah.
We hear from some of them who are just lovely people who say, yeah, you know, you want to believe in your sky God. I don't. That's great. We'll get together on everything else, which is delightful. And those are warm and wonderful. And we consider those people friends. We consider everybody friends. But we also hear from the louder ones who think that anyone who believes anything that is involved in faith or scripture at all is a moron, and B, morally equivalent to the worst monsters in history. Because, you know, a lot of the history's worst atrocities were justified by the Bible. Therefore, anyone who believes in the Bible is...
Well, I think we hear from those people in the media rather than
exactly.
on a podcast. We don't get a lot of letters like that.
But every now and then, I get a, hey, dumbass.
Okay.
And A, if that's true, then every atheist is Mao. Because, you know, hey, there's an atheist who killed 50 million people. Here's an atheist over here named Stalin who killed 30 million people. Therefore, all atheists are mass murdering monsters who hate humanity. I don't believe that at all. But making that argument, I can understand how if a person feels that they are excluded and shunted to the side and their opinions are not taken seriously in a predominantly Christian culture, which this certainly is, they'd get pissed. I can certainly understand that. But I think there's something just childish about making that argument that and the problem is that's the one that makes it in front of the camera. The much more interesting, complicated, rich, interesting conversations that you can have among all kinds of people never makes it onto the camera. What you see on television, the way faith and lack thereof gets represented in the culture is on the one hand, there's Kim Davis. On the other hand, there's Bill Maher saying everyone who's a believer is an idiot. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing in between. And the reality is most of what happens in the world happens in between, way apart from those two positions.
So I'm going to read from a book by Michael Jenkins, J-I-N-K-I-N-S. Mm-hmm. This book is called Called to Be Human, Letters to My Children on Living a Christian Life. And, it reminds me a little bit of Ta-Nehisi Coates' book in that, you know, it's the same format. It's letters to my children kind of thing. Same genre.
Okay.
But he is writing about, he is writing to his children as a person of faith, knowing that the likelihood that they are going to go out in the world and perhaps not be children of faith mm-hmm. or not be people of faith, it's not an anxiety-driven book. It's a conversation book.
Right.
With people that he loves very much and he knows might have differences with him, and he is writing with love about that those differences. So just a couple sentences from this book. He quotes from another theologian who said, "I have for years been running into men who are better than their creeds."
Ah.
And I think of Jimmy Carter when I think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I have become rather disgusted by Christians who treat belonging to Christ like some kind of exclusive club membership.
Mm-hmm.
I am glad God's grace is a lot bigger than what passes as grace administered by God's fan clubs.
Mm-hmm.
I am embarrassed by the smallness of so many religiously minded people. and I become angry when their small-mindedness wounds a person like you, because you are bigger than their creed.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a matter of tolerance. As you've heard me say a million times, tolerance is just the bare minimal expectation of a civil society. Tolerance expresses a kind of forbearance and can be just another form of one-upmanship. I believe this and you believe that, and even though I'm right and you're wrong, I'll tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all tolerance maintains, it represents a minimal response to difference. I'm astonished when I hear Christians claim to know God's position on everything from phonics in reading instruction to housing policies for urban Chicago. God may indeed have a housing policy in the works for urban Chicago, but I don't have a lot of clarity on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want it to be a condition for membership in the church. At any rate, there's something about reverence for God that demands that we shut up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
How can we say, I love God whom we have never seen, if we cannot find it in us to love human beings, the only images of God that bear God's copyright?
Mm-hmm.
That was the question asked by the author of 1 John. And I'm going to stop there. But he talks about the story in the Gospels where Jesus asked the disciples, who do people say I am?
Mm-hmm.
And they start this big religious discussion. Well, some people say you're John the Baptist, come back to life. And some people say you're Moses, come back to life. And some people say you're going to start this new movement that's a church and is going to have a building. And other people think this. And he stops them. He says, who do you think I am? And they say, oh, wait. You're the Christ. You're this thing that is not is sort of part of that whole creed thing.
Right.
And so
you don't care about any of that shit.
I don't care about any of that.
No, I'm saying you're the part of humanity and the part of immortality that doesn't care about any of that stuff.
Right, right. And just I'm praying for Kim Davis because I think she's got a lot that's going to go wrong, and
but she's being used.
She's been, well, and, but she's using too.
Exactly.
And I make no mistake, I don't have a lot of sympathy for her. That's not the point. But, you know, Charlie Pierce said today, you know, she's about to have a shitload of money dropped on her.
Yep.
Everybody thinks a shitload of money dropped on you is a blessing. Well, let me tell you, it could destroy her marriage again. Yep.
Well,
it could. There's all kinds of things. You know, I don't think she is intellectually or spiritually up to the task that she thinks she's going to take on.
Well, and watching Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee shove each other out of the way practically to try to grab the microphone to see who's the most
and stand next to her. Yeah. Right. Who's going to be her representative on earth, so to speak. Yeah. All of that is just, first of all, that's just idolatry. And second of all, she's not Jesus.
No.
Well, and that was... I'm going to interrupt you.
Sure,
That was where somebody who does take the creed seriously really needs to take a dump on Mike Huckabee.
Yeah.
Because if you really take the creed seriously and then you see on Twitter that Mike Huckabee has said God came down in the form of Kim Davis, holy shit.
Right. Well, Mike Huckabee is a grifter.
A flim-flam man. Absolutely.
And one of the easiest cons in the world is the Bible.
Yep.
One of the easiest way to make people look like chumps is the Bible. The easiest way to prey on people and rip them off is to weasel your way into their faith and take everything they have and then have them blame liberals, which is basically how conservatism works. One of the most rich and interesting discussions I remember ever hearing or even participating in from time to time was with the Jesuits at Loyola and in various works of writers who I think are interesting. And one of the metaphors was the Bible is the struggle between the little God on the mountain and the big God in the sky.
Mm.
And the big God in the sky, this is not sky God. This is not the white guy with a beard who guarantees you life. I don't need miracles at all. I don't require them for my belief. I don't require resurrection or anything like that. There's not part of my structure of belief. But there is this large universal sense of love and humanity and kindness and caring for people, and you are obliged as a living human being to look after each other. That is, you're charged with doing that. That's your job. And it breaks my heart when you fail at that. Mm-hmm. That's the big one in the sky. Then there's the little petty god at the mountain who says, ignore that. Ignore all that shit. I'm about rules. I'm about sacrificing on the right days. I'm about ripping people off and punishing them who aren't part of my faith. I'm about, and the text of the Bible is a struggle between these two conflicting points of view. This really petty, Old Testament, punitive, earthbound, mean, cruel, jealous, petty, minor deity whose first injunction is, don't look at anybody but me. And this larger sense of a vast spiritual experience of the universe that's big enough to encompass not just 6,000 years and Jesus riding on a dinosaur, but billions of years, a universe that is gigantic, that is mm-hmm. infinite, etc. And the fact that there's these two impulses are always in conflict with each other. The little god wants to bottle up the big one and sell him.
Yeah.
The big one wants you to stop paying attention to what's mean and low and petty and cruel and get on with the business of being humane and gentle and kind and merciful. And reading this is somebody once said, the Bible is the only book where the protagonist is also the antagonist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The worst villain of the Bible is God. Who wipes out a family on a bet. What sort of creature does that? And I read it as that. I read it as that, an interesting picture on the spiritual struggle of human beings, trying to reconcile two different halves of nature, that which is small and petty versus that which is large and merciful.
Thank you very much, Dirk.
And you can cut all that out if you like.
I can. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Roy. Roy is a very handsome cat, but he is also perpetually terrified. We have a cat that used to be like that.
Yes.
And she is now in a very gentle hospice care situation in our house. Mm-hmm. I keep giving her 6 months to live, and she keeps taking it.
Yeah.
So... 6 more months, I'll take that. Sure. And she goes from not eating, and then all of a sudden she's got an appetite again. And so we're just kind of making her as absolutely comfortable and pampered as we can. But she used to be a real scaredy cat, and she's much better now. So we understand those perpetually terrified kitties. Go visit Roy at our website or Facebook page. And you can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website as well. Someone bought a treadmill this week on our link.
Really?
And,
wow.
Yeah. And, you know, we got our average donor, the person that sends us money, sends about $8. That's the average.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot more than that. Like, you know, every once in a while we get a $100 donation or, you know, a lot or more. And that's cause for, wait, stop everything. I have to show you this. But usually people send $5 or $10. This person bought a treadmill on Amazon for whatever Amazon was charging. And for no extra money, no extra effort than just clicking our link, we got $80.
Which is... amazing.
Amazing. We got $80. That'll pay for meals at Netroots Nation next year. I mean, you know, think about that. Mm-hmm. So, but the interesting thing is on the other end of it, someone bought the series of DVDs for House of Cards.
Uh-huh.
We got $5.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a donation that someone would just make, to make a $5 donation. So, and here it doesn't cost you nothing.
Right.
So if you are... if the alternative to shopping at Amazon is going to a big box store, please shop at Amazon with our link. On the other hand, we believe in shopping local. So if you have a local vendor that you use, please do that.
Yeah.
We appreciate shopping local. We really do. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast by giving us a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal addresses are there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. September 30th, Driftglass, is International Podcast Day.
Really?
I know. And we have registered for a contest where we can win a plaque.
I love plaques.
I love plaques. This is based on how many people between now and September 26th, I believe it is, actually write an appreciative review either at iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Those are the two places they will be looking.
Wow.
So if you have not ever written a review of our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio and you do that this month, we might get a plaque.
Now, here's the thing.
Yes.
If you are an instructor at a college that has, say, a really large computer lab and a lot of students who are beholden to you for their grades, I'm not saying you should tell them to do this and give them like scripts and have them sit down and do it for 5 minutes, because that'd be wrong. That'd be really wrong of me to suggest that. I'm just saying if
to give them extra credit for doing it, that would be doubly wrong.
Yeah, that would be terribly wrong. If that would have occurred to you independently of me mentioning this, and then you think retroactively, that's a really good idea. I should do that for those guys.
I should have my 300 English lit students.
Exactly.
Write an appreciative comment about a podcast that I listened to.
There is nothing we can do to stop you from doing
that. We can't stop you.
You're free people living in a free country. So, you know, what can I say? But, you know, I tried my best.
Driftglass, you're a terrible person.
I'm still waiting for the Kofax Awards to come back. So that's how out of it I am.
Hey, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal.
Hey, by the way, thank you for reviewing. And it's not rating, by the way.
No.
Just giving us 5 stars doesn't count.
No.
So you actually have to write how much you appreciate our podcast. So
again, copy paste.
Appreciation is important.
Copy paste. Real simple.
Anyway, I will put some details about that up at our Facebook page soon.
And when you say details, you mean boilerplate language. You copy and paste.
How much I appreciate Driftglass and Blue Gal and all they've done for me.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Other than the Bible bitch portion, it's a good show.
Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties say, hey, Mike Huckabee, I got your eye of the tiger right here.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University, Magnolia ePublishing sent you, Driftglass, the easiest science fiction university ever. He said, I was trying to cool it with science fiction universities, and I will. But like Brokeback Mountain, I wish I knew how to quit you, Driftglass.
Sorry. I just, you know, that's just how we do here, baby. You know.
But this is clips basically of you, Driftglass, talking about science fiction, and you have to guess what you were talking about.
Well, I have failed miserably at remembering everything I've done.
It's amazing. Every once in a while, I'll go back and listen to an old podcast and cringe. You know? But
I said, what?
Yeah. Anyway, let's try these. This is you talking in past episodes about science fiction, oftentimes during the political part of our podcast. So,
oh, man. So he listened to the whole thing.
Oh. I know. And I don't know where he found the time to pull these out, because this is just amazing. But anyway, here we go. Number one.
He says the power to destroy a thing is the absolute control over it.
You do realize that all of our listeners are now taking a drink, right?
Yes, well, of course. Science fiction quote.
When Driftglass pulls out a science fiction quote.
whip it out, baby. Whip it out. Get that flask out.
Get that flask out and take a drink.
First of all, let me just say, the guy doing the talking is an insufferable git. I don't know how anybody could listen
blah,
to
blah, blah, blah.
Week in, week out. But the subject at hand would be Paul Muad'Dib, also known as Paul Atreides, from Dune.
That's correct. Dune. You're talking about Dune in that one. All right, try this one, number two.
Uses drugs and an isolation tank to turn himself into a hominid.
Yeah.
You know, to a proto-human concerned only with killing, eating, and fucking. And that's what the Tea Party is.
Yep. Altered States, William
Altered
Hurt.
States, William Hurt. This is the easiest science fiction.
Like
you needed
times.
To get 10. You need to get a 10 on this or you're in big trouble. All right?
All right.
Number three.
The only truly Catholic-based science fiction novel I know is called Canticle for Leibovitz.
Correct.
Which is still an awesome novel, which you should read if you haven't already. It's really good.
All right. Number four.
Refuse to acknowledge him as a Democrat anymore.
Yes,
quite rightly.
And that's absolutely true. They you know, they practice the practice of discommendation. They turn their backs on him and fold their arms, and you are not a Democrat.
That would be the hipsters rejecting Hillary, or the Klingon practice of discommendation.
Yeah,
they all
which you mentioned in the clip. Yeah, yeah.
Hold their arms and say, "You're not a Klingon anymore, man." Remember when it was about the music? Well, I guess you just sold out, haven't you?
And they turn their backs. Yeah, yeah. All right, number five.
I think he's kind of the guy who goes back in time to kill himself off before he says stupid political shit that he needed to say yesterday, but it today is really inconvenient. The problem is he doesn't have an actual time machine. So the only thing he can do is disavow it, the shit that came out of his mouth 15 minutes ago, and hope that the Beltway media will go along with him, because it would be rude to point out that, dude, you're a giant liar. So instead, he's just...
And Bruce Willis is so over that and so tired of that shit.
Yeah.
This is about time traveler extraordinaire Bruce Willis in his other time travel movie that isn't The 12 Monkeys. This is Looper.
Looper's a good movie, too.
Very good movie. There have been a lot of really pretty damn good science fiction movies coming out on a pretty regular basis in the last several years. I'm kind of impressed.
And interesting trivia, you know, Emily Blunt is in Looper.
We love Emily Blunt.
Yeah, we love Emily Blunt because she's in Edge of Tomorrow. She plays the Angel of Verdun, also known as Full Metal Bitch. Yeah.
It's
the
Full Metal Bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she's had her share of science fiction credits along with Bruce Willis. So.
Well, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is racking up, who plays young Bruce Willis, frankly. Also from Inception and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, science fiction as a genre, this is something that a lot of us dorks were hoping we would see one day, where it's a respectable genre that generates, you know, billions of dollars in revenue and employs actual actors and they make real movies out of it, which is always kind of limping along. There was always some decent science fiction. But oh, by the way, speaking of that, I know I've been pimping The Martian. Which is the hardest science of all the science fiction movies you're likely to see. And if they do a bad job of it, I doubt they will.
And we have to do a huge thank you to Carol.
Yeah.
Our listener Carol sent us a gift certificate to AMC Movie Theaters so that the whole family can go see The Martian.
I believe Magnolia ePublishing also sent me an ebook copy.
Oh, nice.
Of
nice.
The Martians, in case I want to copy it. Just in case you want to copy and paste, dude. Like, wow.
Yeah, thank
that's
you.
Really nice.
You saved him a lot of typing.
But there'll be a three-night event. Arthur Clarke's Childhood's End.
Oh, my gosh.
Produced as a major made-for-TV event. And, you know, it's one of those
people
things.
People must be so worried that they're going to screw that up because everybody knows that book.
Yeah. Everybody's got their canonical favorites, and everyone's seen Dune be just butchered on the screen and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a very good job with Man of the High Castle, episode one of the Man of the High Castle. And the mini-series of Dune is pretty good, actually. So I'm crossing my fingers that they don't take one of my favorite books from childhood and just botch the crap out of it. But so far, I hold out hopes. And just the idea that they're actually digging into the real gold that's out there in science fiction to
Yeah, it's really good news.
Is good news.
Really good news. Mm-hmm. I think people of your generation, Drew Glass, and my generation are finally gaining enough weight in Hollywood or access to money or something, and they want to go back and make these kind of things. By the way, has anyone ever seen Joseph Gordon-Levitt and James Franco in the same room? Because I always get those two guys mixed up.
Well, Joseph Gordon-Levitt started off his career on television in science fiction.
Oh, he did.
He was Tommy in Third Rock from the Sun.
That's right. He was a little kid. Yeah. Yes. So yes.
Mr. And he really is a tough actor.
He is.
He really does. Yep. He shows up, he does the work, and he's very good at his craft, and I admire that.
And James Franco does everything.
Yeah.
He goes to college, he teaches literature, he does, yeah. He throws down with Stephen Colbert about Tolkien and fails. And
Stephen Colbert throws it right back in his face.
Wipes the floor with him. Yep, yep.
My house with this bullshit?
Yeah,
really? Yeah. All right, what's next?
What's next? We went off on a little tangent there.
So that was Looper.
That was Looper number 5. Now we're going to do number 6.
7-part, 70-minute long review of. Yeah. And when you told me to watch this, I said, "Yeah, I'm going to watch 70 minutes of YouTube review." 70 minutes later, I'm holding my sides in laughing so hard.
Oh, that's awesome. Burn your copy of The Phantom Menace. wash your mouth out. Hopefully the new arrival, episode 7, will come along and make life right again. We'll restore balance to the Force. But that was the Red Letter Media review of The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, if you haven't seen on YouTube, you need Red Letter Media, you need to go see that, because it talks all about the protagonist of the movie.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't take the comedy out of it, but do you remember several years ago, there was a YouTube series called You Suck at Photoshop?
Yep, yep.
And it was, you know, this is awful, you're terrible, you don't know what you're doing. But it was a really good introduction to how to do Photoshop. Mm-hmm. It's really excellent. I would take the Phantom Menace review and use it as a film school screenwriting 101 instruction on how not to fuck up a script.
Right.
And how and what the pitfalls are, because it's that good. It really is spectacular.
It really is. Shows you how to tell or how to write a short story. I mean, don't lose. People have to be able to recall. People have to be able to tell you what happens in the story and who the people are. And if they can't do that, and no one can do that about Phantom Menace, that's the beauty of this review, is they actually interview us. Okay, tell us what this character does. And you can tell what C-3PO is. You can tell what R2-D2 is, even though they're robots.
Yeah,
their character's like.
In writing class, I would, when I was taking and both when I was facilitating, one of the most important exercises is recall.
Yeah.
We read something last week. What do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And you can all, and especially if it's student writing, if you can't make anything memorable that a week later, no one can remember what the hell you're, even though you know that the assignment is coming, you can't remember it, something is wrong with your story.
Yep.
I would also pair the Phantom Menace review, just because I'm a dork, with the Patton Oswalt filibuster. the unedited, full-length Patton Oswalt filibuster from Parks and Recreation.
Which is about Star Wars.
About Star Wars.
And it is him, basically, I don't think there was a script for that.
No.
I think he just started geeking out about Star Wars.
They invited him on and said, we want you to come on and do a filibuster as part of the story. You're blocking an attempt to take a vote, and we want you to just riff for however long you want on whatever subject you want.
And he wanted to do, here's what I think the new Star Wars movie should be.
And it was just, and then you work in the you work in the Marvel universe and how you can connect these two. And you just know this really is Patton Oswalt.
Oh, this is his brain on display. Yes.
Patton Oswalt at Worldcon in the con suite at 2 in the morning. They had to fix this shit, man. And it's quite memorable. So if you YouTube Patton Oswalt filibuster Parks and Rec, you will be richly rewarded. It's lovely.
And it's Star Wars related, so yeah, it is science. This is Science Fiction University, people. All right,
it's everything related. He brings in all three universes and makes
man.
Them. Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, number seven.
Oh wow!
Because which also starred Charlton Heston.
Take a drink.
Yes, thank you. Which was based on a book called Make Room by Harry Harrison, and which starred Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah, interesting.
Oh yeah, Soylent Green.
You're talking about Soylent Green.
Soylent Green, yeah. That's Harry Harrison's Make Room.
Okay, yeah. So Driftglass.
Yeah.
For number eight, we're going to throw you a curveball. This is me talking.
Oh, you talking?
Just me.
All I hear when you talk is blah blah blah.
Blah blah blah.
That's all
blah,
I hear. Okay, hit me.
All right.
There's this scene near the beginning of the book where they are using water to baptize a child, and everyone is aware that they're using clean water in this little tiny vial to baptize this baby, and what a waste that is because there is no water.
Parable of the Sower.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's
the scene in Parable of the Sower that I read at the beginning of the book, and I had to put it down because it's so sad.
Yeah, and it's not that it's badly written.
Oh no!
It's an amazing. She was an amazing writer, and we miss her terribly. And an amazing reader, rich, beautiful, bass voice. I heard her read at a library in Chicago. Read her stuff at a library in Chicago. But a very sad book, and way too realistic. Way too this could really happen, brutal. I mean, Parable of the Sower would make a really good edition, a 13-part or 12-part or 10-part series on AMC. Because now we've gotten to the point where, especially with things like The Walking Dead, where audiences are used to sadness.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're used to being able to have their hearts broken and seeing their favorite characters killed. Because that's what novelists do. And I think the Parable of the Sower, if done correctly, please don't screw this up, would be a splendid addition to the stuff that you can pull out of a DVD and play at your leisure, because it's a really lovely story. But yeah, terribly sad.
Well, we're running out of time, but at some point I'm going to do a filibuster of why I think they need to remake Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale and use a Scandinavian director. But I'm not going to do that today.
Okay.
All right.
That's a nice tease.
Next week, we are back with Dogfaced Herman.
Yep.
He has sent us a Science Fiction University on monsters and metaphors. It's very good. So make sure you tune in for that.
Yeah.
We don't have any Mr. Robot to talk about this week, but thank goodness Colbert started a new show, so we have something to do and talk about.
Uh-huh.
And it was fun to watch people on Twitter whining about the second episode.
Yeah.
Last night. It's not like it was.
Oh, it isn't.
But I'm seeing it. I mean, like you said, we only watched two episodes. You know, give it time. Right. But to me, it is exactly like Johnny Carson in that I want to watch the monologue and the first funny segment and then go to bed, because sleep is more important than watching Scarlett Johansson. And I thought it was hilarious that last night, and we were recording on Thursday, Colbert put on a giant hat and made proclamations. I mean, that was such a nod to Carson. But you have any thoughts? As I said, we've only watched two episodes, so... Well, he's much more political than Carson.
Everyone's going back to school or back to work or back to regular work schedule. This is September, so the days are getting a little shorter and a little chillier will come. And everyone is sort of getting back to their workaday schedules. So Stephen Colbert is back on television. John Boehner is back to being an ineffectual hack. But there's a big hole in the media that is not going to be filled anytime soon that we sort of have to get used to, I think.
Well, is this for our political podcast or is this for Science Fiction?
Well, no, this is for Science Fiction. This is for Television Review.
Okay.
MSNBC is pretty radically changing its lineup. Stephen Colbert is not doing political stuff anymore, really. He's touching on it. But
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes with that. And also, I'll be interested to see whether as this show progresses and he gets more time to do things, for instance, you know, the next few months in movies are going to be Oscar season. These are when the really deep movies come out, and you start to have, you might have people on who are directors and actors who are not Scarlett Johansson. And yeah. I'm not dissing her.
No.
Because she is a great actress and has worked with a lot of directors, but she's a celebrity, you know. So I also want him to go back, and maybe he can or can't do this, to, you know, having authors on and having books on and having...
And long and interesting interviews.
Yeah. Yep.
Which doesn't fit the talk show format of, you know, get in, do your 3.5 to 5 minutes and get out.
Right.
But there's a missing... Colbert is gone from being Stephen Colbert of the Colbert Report.
Right.
Jon Stewart is gone, and MSNBC is becoming CNN Fox Light. Really, it really is.
And we'll see what happens with The Daily Show, because it is coming back. So we don't know how that's going to unfold.
So there's a big piece missing out of the media,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what's going to fill it, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
Probably this podcast. but I notice it's like a missing tooth. There's something that used to be there that isn't there anymore, and it's negative space, Blue Gal.
Mm-hmm.
And negative space in the media will always be filled with something. And I just don't know what that is going to be yet.
Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump. Yeah. All right. We're going to record our political podcast now.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
And we love you. And have a good week.
Have a wonderful week.
And I love you.
I love you, too.